Hey, welcome to Gilmore Guys. I'm Kevin.
I'm Demi.
And we're the Gilmore Guys. And before we start the episode today, we just wanted to take a second and dedicate this episode to Harris Whittles. Harris Whittles passed away a couple of days ago. We're recording this on February the 21st. And Harris's influence, I think, on both of us is pretty profound to the point where I'm not even sure if this podcast would exist without his influence. I remember listening to his episodes of Comedy Bang Bang, Analyze Fish, You Talking You Two to Me. And he is so funny. He's also from Texas.
Is he?
Which is funny. Yeah, he's from Houston, H-Town. And he passed away. And damn, you got to meet him at one point, right?
I met him a few times. I was in a writer's room he worked on for a project that I don't think has come out yet. But he was easily the funniest person in the room. Just everything he said was like almost just a shot off the brain. He's a very talented guy.
Mm-hmm. So I think the long and short of it, we won't spend too much time on it, but if you like any part of this podcast, then I think a small bit of that could probably be attributed to Harris Whittles and his influence on both of us. So check out his stuff, check out his podcasts, check out his episodes of Parks and Rec. He's so funny on it as the animal control guy with Colton Dunn.
Yeah.
He's so good. Listen to his You Made It Weird interviews. He was so honest and brave and transparent on that podcast. So yeah, we just want to dedicate this episode to him. And yeah, Harris Whittles, we love you. Rest in peace.
Can we get canceled to an independent?
I wonder if like the copyright cops could get up our butt about using so many clips.
And iTunes could probably be like, "Look, we don't like what you're doing. We're going to shut it down right now."
Well, I read this article that iTunes like they don't often remove music for any reason, but the ACLU petitioned them to remove, like, there was a white supremacist punk band that had a bunch of albums on there.
Yeah.
And they were making money off of it because they were selling, and they removed it. Welcome to Gilmore Guys. I'm Kevin.
I'm Demi.
And we're the Gilmore Guys. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is, I'm going to say it, gang, it's a product I actually use. I've been using it for 10 years now. I've made every single website I've made in the last decade using Squarespace because Squarespace actually has everything I need. If you want to start a completely personalized website with a new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint is your answer. Choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business, and optimized for every device. Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people and grow the way you want. You can do so much with Squarespace, like email campaigns for outreach. You can have analytics to find out who's visiting your website and why. And you can have eShop e-commerce functionality. I used that when I was doing my little bake shop on there for a while. I stopped doing it, but man, the website I had for a little bit looked really good because I used Squarespace. And there's so much I didn't know about setting up my shop that they were able to answer for me over the chat and their award-winning 24/7 customer support. So right now, go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/Gilmore Guys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/Gilmore Guys. Guys, we made it to season three. Here we are in the season that some people cite as the best season of Gilmore Girls.
We'll see.
And other people cite as their least favorite.
Really?
One guy on Twitter did.
I haven't heard anyone cite it as their least favorite, but
we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get into it. But first, before we get into it, is there any business we need to attend to right now? Any house cleaning, housekeeping?
I don't think so.
I'm trying to think. Anything in Gilmore news, in the Gilly world, in the world of Gillies? The fan art's been awesome. The cross stitches.
It's been terrific.
Man, shout out to Will Tapley.
I was about to say Will Tapley.
Oh my gosh.
For made his, two very good his, things.
his illustration of the classic soundboard.
Shaq who?
Made me laugh for days. Oh my gosh, and he made that, and he made like a little Valentine with us with the classic catchphrase, "Welcome to my ass."
Classic catchphrase.
So shout out to Will in the UK. It makes it even cooler to imagine like a dude with a British accent working on these. And he's like, "Hey, there's Gilmore.
Welcome to my ass.
Welcome to my ass. These Gilmore chaps will love it. It's brilliant, brilliant, I say."
Shaq whom?
Shaq whom? So we want to give it up to Will, but then just in general, we want to give it up to the fans.
Oh my God.
What?
Just every time you say that in my head, I'm just like, because every time he says it, he stretches out his arms like,
I do.
Like he's being so giving and like, I do this for the fans.
I mean, I do.
I know, but it's just the way that you do it. It makes me laugh.
Okay, so we gotta, this is the iTunes review challenge. You leave a review on iTunes and we're going to wrap your name and make you feel real good about yourself. Right?
Who knows how you'll feel?
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe you won't feel. Maybe after this, you'll be like, is this all I am? Just a rap, a name in somebody's rap.
Is this all I am to you?
Is this all I am to you? Okay, so let's drop this. Sick. Oh. Beep. What is this?
Oh, you know what this is.
I mean, I do.
This is a really bad version of it.
Are there words?
Nope.
Okay, good.
Check it out.
Abby, not Abigail. She left review. Not from hell. She's from heaven. My name's Kevin. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Ashlack, 6, 8. She's great. She didn't leave hate. She left love like a dove flying away in the sky. Oh, yeah.
Ashley PL Life, thank you for leaving us your time, giving us time to leave us a review. We appreciate it. We appreciate you. Hanishika, don't know how to pronounce it, but that's okay. Hey, thanks. You took out time of your day to leave us a review, and I say that's cool. Baby Bro 666. Baby Bro 666. Thanks for leaving us a review. We love it and we love you.
Cause D-Girl in pink give it to you. Cause D-Girl in pink gonna give it to you. And then IQB Blair 2641. Yeah. And then we got a plan. We're gonna rap about Meg. Parentheses, your biggest fan. Jay Church. Ooh, you didn't leave us in the lurch because you gave us love. Sadie, unmarried lady. Are you 8 or are you 80? I don't know.
Becca from Austin. Becca from Austin. He did a good review. So did Ursula. Bazookuko.
Bazookuko.
Hey, thanks for the review, Ursula. Mia Badia, 53. She left one, too. I said, hey, I read it. It was nice of you to say. Look, I'm really sick.
Greatest Kim ever. I would say bad things about you, never. Hannah Banana, Fofofofana, Molly ate oatmeal. Thanks. Kang, Kanagok? You Kanagok. Really rock. Kate, _ writes. You didn't do the wrong thing. You did the right thing. Ashley R. Mrs. Poop Doctor. Imped Barn. Cause all these gillies gonna give it to us. Cause all these gillies gonna give it to us. All these gillies gonna give it to us. Don't believe me, just write a review. Oh boy.
Don't believe me, just write a review.
I mean, that's a classic hook.
It's the classic hook.
It rolls off the tongue. Thank you. But
it's probably the best freestyle we've done so far. No, it's not.
I think so. I think with the background singers, it's cemented into the canon now. Best rap ever. Well, that was a journey. Let's get into the episode discussion. Episode 301, Lazy, Hazy, Crazy Days.
I hated that song so much.
Well, then it probably worked.
Yep.
So we'll open up the discussion where we open up every discussion with a little segment we call Pop.
Yes.
The
Sure.
We take every single pop culture reference in the show. Well, in this episode, not in the show. Maybe that'll be at the end of the podcast.
Everyone in the show. No.
Get ready for the next
that
2 hours.
That would be an entire episode.
That'd be a lot. So let's do
Why?
It. This is, I don't know. Episode 301, Lazy Hazy Crazy Days of Summer. I don't think that's actually the title.
It's just Lazy
it's days.
Crazy Days.
Yep. Here it is. Pop goes the culture.
What if he doesn't have a Zagat?
I got to see Archie Bunker's chair at the Smithsonian Museum.
Bill Maher's canceled. The name of the show was politically incorrect, for God's sake. Didn't anybody read the title? He's supposed to say those things, damn it.
Brought your Bauhaus t-shirt with it.
Connie Chung's original face back.
Goodbye, Sid and Nancy.
Leopold and Loeb.
What?
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
In the stupid, traditional Dan Quill.
See if you can steal me something off of Tom Daschle's fruit plate. Oh, hey, I figured out how to get the Lazy, Hazy, Crazy Days of Summer out of our heads to sing the Small World song over and over for the next 48 hours. All right, I'll have a Jägermeister and a Jell-O shot.
Woodward, Bernstein, Harry Thomason.
Judy, Vincent has to go to work now.
You're not seriously telling me the future of your marriage depends on Leon Trotsky over there.
Do you really think it looks good to have the American Secretary of the Treasury traveling around with Bono?
Yes, sirree, Minnie-Me.
I mean, why not just send Carson Daly over to the Middle East next time Cheney goes, huh? Or hey, hook up Freddie Prinze Jr. with Colin Powell next time he meets with NATO. I mean, hell, let's hear what Freddie has to say, right?
Napoleon complex. He only really likes the magazine rack. I thought you and Dean might enjoy a little peaches and herb time together. I thought I'd do it like Nell. You know, chicka 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 me.
Did you really have pictures of
Is that offensive?
Norman Rockwell family Christmases dancing in your head?
In an Oscar Wilde sort of way, absolutely.
It is. It's very Ralph Lauren.
Not fair.
Yes, fair. The fairest. The Snow White affair.
They give up careers and become alcoholics, and if you're Sonny Von Bulow, wind up in a coma completely incapable of stopping Glenn Close from playing you in a movie. I bet Trent Lott was behind this.
So how is Dean?
So how was dinner?
So how was Dean?
Ladies and gentlemen, the Williams sisters take center stage at Wimbledon once again. Solidarity, sister.
Yeah, yeah! I hate admitting it because I fancy myself Wonder Woman, but I really want it.
I know you want it. Oh,
not really.
Maybe not the best song. I love that scene.
With her in the diner?
Her in the diner at the end.
I think that's a really good scene.
That might have been my favorite scene of the episode. Okay, so overall.
First time customers always get free. Mimi, was it?
Yeah. That was nice, right?
That was nice.
Isn't it affecting any time the main characters of a show refer to each other as a different name? For some reason, I feel like that convention is used a lot. Like, see you around, Sally. Or like whenever there's like some ruse.
Or like
I'm
when
this
Tristan
person.
Calls Rory Mary. It's so adorable.
Okay, point taken.
No, I know what you mean, though.
Yeah, I'm trying to
when it's
think
like
of
characters
other
that are actually like good to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leopold and Loeb. Make a reappearance in the references.
They love those murderers.
Sid and Nancy, also. That was an episode title. And then otherwise, all the other references checked out. I like how mad Paris is at Bono. What were you going
to
say?
Oh, no. You pointed to me as if I was like, in my head, I was like, wait, do I do a Bono thing? No. I don't know what I was going to. No. Yeah. All the references are fine. But her thing with Bono was that she was like following Barbara Boxer around talking like
from Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Yeah, Barbara Boxer from Parks and Rec.
As she is known.
Yeah.
No, but what I was going to say is, I guess it's not a reference to the pop culture stuff, but like the episode opens with this fake out that I just got frustrated.
Oh,
about.
Let's get into it. Well, okay, let me do the synopsis first
and then we'll
get into it. Okay, Netflix synopsis. Back from a summer internship in Washington, D.C., Rory finds herself torn between Dean and Jess. With Christopher gone, Lorelai questions her future. That's all right. That's good.
Yeah.
It's fine. Like, questions her future. It doesn't say Lorelai goes into Luke's, has him call her Mimi.
Right.
Like, it's not specific enough where it's like, well, now I don't need to watch it. So Netflix will give it to you.
Yeah, we're getting
just
back.
Like Uptown Funk. Netflix,
you can call us Uptown Funk
because we'll give it to you. That's a nice one. Okay, that teaser.
So,
and what a tease, right?
So when the alarm clocks are all going off, I thought, oh, that's very funny, Rory. And she goes downstairs and Luke is in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And without them having to acknowledge it, I was like, oh God, this is a dream. I know this is a dream and I hate it. And I just want them to get over this already.
You hated it?
I just hated it because I know that, like, if I were watching this as it were airing, I know it would have been, like, the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have wanted to be tricked like that. I would have just been like, oh my God, come on. I don't want to, like, I know this isn't real. Let's get past this. I don't want you guys trying to use this as, like, this is the thing. Like, this is going to be the future for them. Look, is this a look into the future? Is this a dream? What's the deal? and I didn't...
like a Lost season 4 thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a flash forward.
But I... It was just the kind of thing of, like, giving the audience what they want, even though it's not what's... It's... I hate dream sequences that are like, here's what you want to see.
Where it's fan service?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. I have the same kind of reaction to it. I did think it was interesting, and it's interesting for a show that doesn't employ cinematic conventions at all.
Yeah.
So a dream sequence, we think of that pure, like we see that in TV shows and in movies all the time, but that's like, that's using a cinematic language that the show just isn't versed in and does a vocabulary that it doesn't use a lot. Mm. So to use it, and they do, I think they do other dreams. I'm almost certain they do other dreams in the future, but for the first time to do it, it is very jarring. It's like, okay, now we're going to, you know, now we'll have flights of fancy like this. But really, that's, I think maybe there's like 2 or 3 other dreams in the whole show, but it doesn't happen a lot. Or like you don't see like the Shakespeare episode where Rory's Juliet and Dean's Romeo or whatever. Like they don't use those cinematic conventions a lot. But it was kind of frustrating, but I did kind of like the low keyness of it too. At the same time, enjoyed the dream sequence that it was, because the language of Gilmore Girls cinematically is so chill anyways. Like it's never like, oh my gosh, da da da, ba ba ba. Like it never like undercuts anything visually or with music. But it just kind of lets the performances breathe and speak for themselves and kind of just lets the camera glide as it may. Kind of like a Woody Allen movie. It reminds me of that a lot of times. Like just a long take, masters.
Right.
So I like the dream sequence okay. I liked her gown. Well, let's get into the fashion report real quick.
Liked her gown.
Sorry.
Fashion.
That was a cute little nighty, I will say.
That it was.
Just to be a guy.
And
then we need to talk, of course, about the bucket hat.
I laughed so hard when she put on that hat because it reminded me of Charlize Theron's character in Arrested Development. That's exactly what it looked like to me.
It was totally, Rita.
Mr. F.
Mr. F. Tell you what, though, Paris is looking damn cute in that pink little dress of hers when she's getting ready for the day.
Her nervousness made it even cuter. Like, just, I feel like Paris, her whole thing about, like, every time that she's so up, like wound up tight and like serious about stuff is like the part of her that you're supposed to see as funny and like not take too seriously, because everything, like all the emotional stuff about her is just like, oh, that's sad. And her personality aside from that is just like everything needs to be perfect. And even though I feel like as a person, that would be the kind of thing you see and go like, oh my God, that's such a stressful thing to witness or to feel like that at all. But as a character that we're just watching on screen, that's funny. So whenever she's like, what if he doesn't use the Zagat? And then, like, she opens the door and he's like, or at least that's what the Zagat said. And you're just like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, baby.
What did she say when he said the Zagat thing?
I think she said,
it's
do
perfect.
Me right now.
Oh, yeah.
She did say it's perfect, which I thought was so funny.
I did
intense.
Too. Yeah.
It's perfect.
In my head, I heard her say, you're perfect. And I was like, yo, that's a red flag for that guy.
I think she did say you're perfect.
Oh.
If I'm remembering correctly, and I may not be. Correct me, Twitter. I know you will. I know you will. She does say you're perfect, which is like, whoa.
Yeah, just a bit strong. But at the same time, I don't know what he thought or even if he heard that. Maybe it seems like the kind of thing she just mumbled under her breath.
Right. And so this is actually our introduction of the character Jamie. Now, Jamie is a character that does come back.
Hooray.
Yeah. So Paris... this is her little boyfriend. She gets a boyfriend.
Oh, yay.
And you like it. He only has one scene, and I don't know the actor's name, but he, in the one scene that he's in, I ended up enjoying him a lot. Okay, I'm looking it up. Paris does say, you're perfect.
The Zagat.
So intense. The Zagat. Okay, so overall, I gotta say, I did not love this premiere. I didn't think there was a lot of stuff going on in it, really.
You know what I particularly didn't like about it? It seemed like it was shot very strangely, and it seemed like there was a lot of weird deliveries from certain characters. Richard's voice seems higher. Michelle's voice seems like... is Michelle in this, or is it the next one?
He's definitely in 302.
Yeah,
I don't know about 301.
There was a lot of scenes that were just shot differently. Everyone looks really different. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It seems like there was a jump in... not a jump in style, but something is different between season two and season three visually.
Oh, you think like maybe they got a new DP or the crew is different? Yeah. I don't know. I didn't notice too stark of a difference. So maybe it could be that like they switched from 16mm to film to 35mm rather.
Did they?
I don't know. One difference we didn't address between season one and season two, I don't think, is the difference in Richard and Emily's mansion or their house.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it's not a mansion.
It's a mansion, probably.
But you know, like, and then this is at Frangela Frass tweeted. She said, I'm on EP 208, so maybe it's been covered, but I'm surprised you haven't pointed out the mysterious changes in construction of both Lorelai's house and Richard and Emily's. Lorelai's entryway got a door frame to the living room, and Richard and Emily's cocktail room is totally different than in the first season. Because it does have the staircase behind it now. Like, you remember in the first season where it's just, like, a wall and pictures? And now, when, like, Lorelai and Rory sit down before dinner, you see the stairs behind
them. I didn't
even
notice that.
Really? Yeah. So, I mean, it's just one of those things that oftentimes between season one and season two of a show, they upgrade the sets. It's pretty common. I know they did on The West Wing and countless other shows where it's, like, the first season, they go a little skimpy on the budget.
Yeah.
Because they're like, I don't know about the long-term profitability. Do we want to invest this much money in it? So I think when they got renewed for season two, they're like, okay, let's sink in. Let's give them some stairs. And I think you see it even with the inn in episode, it's either, or it might be both 301 and 302. They like open the doors now and you can see some greenery coming in and some of the light.
Yeah.
So they definitely upgraded some of the sets.
It's so weird to me that they would upgrade the sets, though, because I feel like once they've got that low-budget set up, why upgrade it, you know?
Oh, I'm sure it's probably just Palladino fighting for it. And like,
yeah.
Because Richard and Emily's house, especially watching the first season again, it was very claustrophobic in that little dining room. Or not the dining room, but the study or the living room or whatever it's called, where they chill out and have drinks before the dinner. Yeah. So I do like that it is opened up and it gives a little bit more scale. Or... is this? No, it's not. I was going to ask if this is the first season where they go outside, but they do in season two as well. And then eventually, I think by season five or six, you get to see Richard and Emily's pool house, which they do have, but they just haven't shown
They've
yet.
They've never mentioned.
They've never mentioned well, it. They've never shown it, but we'll get there.
Yeah, we go outside, and it's not a very exciting going outside. Nope.
Hopefully, it's not a spoiler that they do have a pool house. But overall, I just feel like there wasn't enough dramatic tension happening. It seemed like a lot of wheels spinning. Whereas in 302, I feel like we get more substantial, kind of meatier stuff. But the result of which is like I was kind of tired of everything. Like
I feel like premieres are always just like welcome back to the world, not so much trying to move it along.
Because
I feel like it's either like middle of the season when something big happens and everyone's like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. Or the finale where everyone's like, oh, we gotta wait, this is crazy, such a cliffhanger, can't wait for it to come back. But the premiere is just like, oh yeah, I remember, this is how it is, this is just it's like catch up,
right?
But as people who are watching it like, oh, we just saw the finale like a week ago, it's sort of boring for us to see this now and go
right,
like we still remember exactly how it was happening.
So I wonder, yeah, I guess maybe it probably played better when it was on the air, but watching us how we are. Did you notice that there's new credits?
No. What's different?
Well, first of all, a couple of things. I believe Dean and Milo Ventimiglia, Lady Gaga have new shots. Kelly Bishop has a new shot. Alexis Bledel has a new shot.
Oh, so they all have like new shots.
Yeah, for their like name, oh, okay. For their card. Yeah. And Sean Gunn is part of the main credits now.
I did notice that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's holding up, and it's all shots from this episode, which I find funny. It's like, there wasn't anything in the other episodes that were like more, but you know, I guess it's fine. Because by the time they're in post-production for that, they must have shot like four or five episodes, but yeah, it's fine. I love that shot of Kelly Bishop that they replaced it with, because the first one was real like tight-assy in seasons one and two, and this is more like fun, because she like, blah, da 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 da, and she like, wait, I just did something totally visual.
He dropped a quarter in a bucket and pulled his hand back.
No, I think it's when she's giving her the scone mix. Oh, she makes some scones, Lorelai.
I don't know why you're having so much trouble imagining making scones.
I mean, they were hooked on those scones, yeah. Man. Hooked on a scone.
Oh, God, you leaned back and started screaming. And I was like, what's happening? I realized eventually.
Well, I did it off key too. Let me try it again. Hooked on a scone. And I just want a bone. Cause you're in love with me. That's for the nice person on iTunes that said, you guys should sing every episode. I love your voices.
Oh my God. Thank you for loving our voices, but you are gravely mistaken.
Gravely. You will die because of your mistake.
You will die for this error.
There was another little gay joke in that first scene at Suki's house.
Oh, yeah. I'm very, very gay.
Yeah. How can you like Ruffles? Because I'm very gay. Or because I'm gay.
The way he delivered it made me laugh, but I was also just like, that's not... I don't think that's good.
Yeah, I'm always uncomfortable with the gay stuff on this show. The gay jokes, I should say. Not.
I'm uncomfortable with all the gay stuff.
But I mean, after all, he did say, God, we have so many soundboards now.
I look hot.
I look Hyatt.
Hyatt. I look like the Hyatt.
The Marriott.
So... picking up from season two, there actually is kind of a time jump. I know we talked in the season two finale about how there's not, but in this one there is. Between season four and season five, there's not. And five and six, there's not. I don't know if there is between six and seven, because I don't know. But this one, some time has passed. Lorelai, just do it right into the mic. I'll edit it out. It's fine. Lorelai has not told Emily and Richard that Christopher knocked up Sherry.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know how to use a rubber or whatever he uses. Whatever your choice may be.
Look, I've had sex tons of times. I've never needed a rubber. Let's do it.
Oh, I'm Christopher. Oh.
Duh. I don't like how Richard handled it.
No. That brings us to a question from Twitter. Actually.
Twitter Q&A.
At Tallulah. Asks, Emily and Richard are upset Christopher and Lorelai didn't work out because of appearances, not because they actually want Lorelai to be happy. Agree or disagree?
Agree. Because if they want Lorelai to be happy, they'd probably just be okay with how things are. She seems fine.
They would just listen to her.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'd concur. But at the same time, like, they do sincerely care about her, but I think they do want her to be happy, but I think they care about appearances more. Like, if there's a tipping scale, the appearances being upkept is more important than Lorelai's happiness.
I think Emily is coming from a place of thinking that she wants Lorelai to be happy, but is more concerned. Like, her idea of... she thinks that she knows what will make Lorelai happier, and she's not exactly right about it. She thinks that, oh, Christopher being in her life, that'll do it. It's got to be Christopher. And she doesn't even think of the idea that she can be fine without him.
Right.
Which is sort of, I don't know what the word is. It's not good.
It's narrow-minded?
Yeah. That's what I would
say. She has tunnel vision when it comes to Lorelai's life and what happiness is.
Yeah. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Took the words right out of my mouth. Who sings that?
I didn't even know that was a song.
I took the words right out. I feel like that's Meatloaf or something.
Taylor Dane.
I didn't love Suki and Jackson's storyline in this.
I didn't either, but I know it was all for the sake of comedy, so I'm fine with it. Although...
all for the sake of comedy.
All for the sake of comedy.
That's why we're all here.
I was really frustrated with Suki wanting to paint the house, because it was clear that Jackson literally had no problem with it.
Yeah.
It was just a made-up thing to be like, we need to give him something to do.
Yeah, Suki was just insane for no... yeah, there wasn't a difference of opinions or an actual conflict. She literally invented... the writers invented Suki literally inventing conflict. But Mr. Matt Gibson from Facebook said, should Melissa McCarthy's next blockbuster film be a flashback reenactment of Suki and Jackson's honeymoon? I'm thinking something set in a cabin out in the woods. There's a bear. Hilarity ensues. Twist. Something bad happens to the bear at the end of the film, and it ends up being the stuffed bear Suki puts in the living room.
Matt Gibson, I'd like to give you $1 million. Go right into production on this.
That's me handing them out.
That's him handing them out, laying them up for threes. So one thing about that entire D plot even is that it started, and the whole reason it happens is because of Suki going like, well, if he doesn't he says he doesn't like, he says he likes it now, but eventually he won't, and then he'll regret it, and then he'll regret me or something. Like, that's all of their conflicts. But, like, all of their conflicts are just, can be found in the root of she thinks that eventually Jackson will come to regret her or come to hate
her.
That's
most of them up to this point.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think she's got to get to a point where she realizes, like, oh, that's not going to happen as easily as I think it will.
We've been married for a year.
Right.
He's probably not going to leave me.
He won't leave me over paint colors.
Yeah. It is. Do you think it's a frustrating thing to watch a main character's conflict just be insecurity?
It is when it's as often as it is happening with Suki. I'm sure that it'll come to a point where they'll have this big moment where she realizes it's not a big deal, and they can't ignore it. They can't just be like, oh, we know they had that big moment, but she's still insecure. They'll have to, like, get over it, because that's just how TV shows work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just waiting for that moment, and then they'll find out some other conflict, like, oh, I think maybe Jackson is, I don't know, bored of our relationship. I don't know. Something else.
Closeted.
Closeted, yes.
Hey, foreshadowing in this episode.
I'm very, very gay.
True.
No, but I just know that they're not going to break up, so this, I mean, it's sort of weird for me to pretend like that's, knowing that they won't break up is not a good reason for me to be like, get on with it, but it's just, the insecurity thing, I...
Wait, you think they break up?
No.
Okay.
I'm saying I know they won't.
Okay.
So...
Well, I don't know, dude.
Stop.
Okay.
No, I know they won't break up.
Yep.
And I feel like it's not fair for me to go like, we all know they don't break up. Get on with it. Stop pretending like it's a problem for them. But I will say that the insecurity thing, because it's been brought up almost so pointedly so many times,
mm-hmm.
I'm so sick of that. And I just want to get to a point where their frustration is something else other than her insecurity.
Okay.
Maybe we see what Jackson's worried about in their relationship.
Right. Because, yeah, if there's going to be conflict, but you know the stakes are they're still together, you just want that conflict to be as interesting as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand that. We got one interesting question on Facebook from Ashley Allen. In the dream sequence, Lorelai says, I said, make sure I have the option to get up at 7 to Luke, as opposed to not having the option, as in death. It sounds like Lorelai was pleading for her life the night before. That's a question for some reason. Am I still tipsy from last night and watching Gilmore Girls naked on my couch and eating an orange? Please answer these questions.
Yes, you are. Wait, eating an orange?
Mm-hmm.
The way she says that, I mean, I just imagined her, like, eating an orange, like
covered
like
in liquor. Oh. Oh, what? I know. Well, she said tipsy.
Covered in liquor?
Sure. How does alcohol work? I don't drink.
Who knows? No, but I don't know. It's just the image of someone biting into an orange like an apple is so weird to me. Anyway,
did someone propose,
that's exactly what happened.
Did someone propose we do a drinking game episode or a drunk episode?
I think someone asked if we'd ever played the drinking game for Gilmore Girls that exists.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Answer,
we haven't.
I have not. You haven't?
I haven't.
Okay.
Well, then.
Well, this chapter is over.
The way that they run into each other at the airport was just so dumb to me.
Were they like, whoa, whoa,
yeah,
whoa, whoa.
I really just wanted to hear like, boing.
Like Benny Hill sound
exactly
effects.
I was just like, what's happening? This is so weird. Get up.
In that dumb airport, it's just like a room.
Yeah.
A room with TV screens in it.
So here's the terminal. There's light. You can see. That's where mm-hmm. the airplanes probably are.
But again, our attitude on this should be like D.C. Pearson's, where he said, it's not a bug, it's a feature.
It's a feature.
Mm-hmm.
How small town.
Yeah.
Also, there's no way that Stars Hollow has an airport. So where do you think that she was?
What's the nearest airport in Connecticut? Does Hartford have an airport?
Probably. I don't know. Probably.
Someone look it up and then correct us, whatever.
You don't have to look it up.
No, look it up and tweet it to Demi.
No.
All day when this episode comes
Don't do
out.
That.
Hashtag, that's where the airport is. And this, that's the scene where Lorelai's like, oh, I got you out of dinner. And Rory's like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
She's so transparent in this episode.
Oh, my God, yeah.
About her feelings. And her subtext is so... It's almost like a weird ruse because Lorelai's not stupid, right? So is she just pretending that she doesn't know that Rory is clearly getting dressed up for the festival for Jess?
Oh, I mean, she even mentions it just like, look, we all know you had a crush on Jess. And she's like, what? Huh? What?
It's the new Luke and Lorelai.
Yeah. Except she's way worse about trying to hide that.
Yeah, she has much less of a poker face.
Yeah.
Because she gets dressed up to the nines for that, for the festival. I guess that's the end of the fashion report. Oh, one other thing. Actually, before we close it out, is someone, at Gret Burt on Twitter asked, Lorelai's shirts are usually conservative, but suddenly red lace in this episode. Also, her ringlets of the early season 2 have returned. I did notice that too. A lot of red.
Yeah.
A lot of reds. They usually get her in blues and stuff.
What was the name of the festival that was in town? Is it just a thing?
I don't know, but Taylor got the big band from New York for it. Oh, I don't remember what it is.
Yeah.
I think it's just the summer festival. And they had that big crane shot, like, look at the whole town. Did you notice that?
When that crane shot happened, I was like, oh my God, this is Disneyland. And I hated
pretty much.
It just made me, it stressed me out. And I was like, oh no, this is going to get really annoying.
So I guess Michael Winters must have had some sort of accident.
We should close out the.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry.
Fashion.
Good fashion report. Apparently, Michael Winters had some sort of accident between season 2 and 3.
Wait, Michael Winters?
He's the guy who plays Taylor.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So he, because he's in, they kind of made him Professor Xavier.
Yeah.
In this
episode. I thought that was weird, but.
Because there's just like 2 lines to explain it before.
Yeah.
Because it's like, Lorelai says, hey, Taylor, how's your leg? And he's like, oh, looking for the guy who left the banana peel.
Yeah, yeah.
Which.
I assume is Jess.
Right. So someone pointed out, or did I write that down? Oh, yeah. Janelle Bosquat. Bosquet, whatever. Why isn't Taylor immediately thinking it was Jess who put the banana peel on his porch? Jess has stolen baseballs, gnomes, created fake crime scenes. That doesn't seem like a pregnant Jess would do. So, yeah. Oversight on Tay-Tay's part. Should we call him Tay-Tay? Is that too informal?
I think it's what he would love. That's not true. He would hate it. So we should do it.
Oh, you know what we didn't cover in that first scene? In the dream sequence?
Mm-hmm. Her pregnancy?
I'll put a toy in your cereal.
Dirty.
Dirty.
The reappearance of the classic catchphrase.
Dirty.
I'll put a toy in your cereal.
It's not even that dirty.
I mean, you got to stretch for it,
yeah,
man.
You really have to stretch for it.
It is the Gilmore Girls. That's what she said. It's just,
dirty.
Dirty.
It's less of a, it's more, God, why am I so bad at words today? It's less subtle. And that's what she said. Yeah, it took me a while to get the word subtle.
Took me a while. Which is kind of interesting in itself. Guys, Demi's a little under the weather, so forgive.
I'm very under the weather.
Yeah.
I'm going to die on air.
Well, I'm not prepared for this.
But ratings, dude.
We care about those PCAST ratings.
Fingers crossed. So the festival in town, do you think they were really singing that song all day?
No, I think it was pre-recorded and then they
like in the world of Stars Hollow,
oh,
do you
sure.
think they were like, yes, here, sing the song all day?
Sure. I imagine Taylor Dan the foresight to check with the big band from New York to see, do you have any other songs? And I'm sure he was like, they just had the one. He's like, summer, that's the word summer in it. Okay, we'll do that. And that's what they did.
That's so insane to me because not only is everyone in the town going to go crazy from it, but then there are these singers who are singing maybe the same song for 8 hours in one spot.
True.
That's crazy. Like, even in the world of Stars
it's
Hollow.
Lazy, hazy, crazy.
It's lazy, hazy, crazy days.
Anytime we say crazy on the show, we should say, this scene was lazy, hazy, crazy. Which you can sing to the Mario theme. Lazy, hazy, crazy.
Lazy, hazy, crazy.
Lazy, hazy, crazy. Lazy, hazy, crazy. Yeah. So maybe they need to get a new event coordinator. I miss Babette and Miss Patty in this episode.
I do too.
Where were they?
Why aren't they hitting on why isn't Miss Patty hitting on the band members?
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, you do see her for a second, right? You see her with the tap dancers. You do. Yeah.
I must have missed that.
There's a sweeping shot.
With the kids?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you see her with the kids.
That makes sense.
Checks out. And so this is the scene where you finally see Rory sees Jess, who she's been looking for and hoping to be noticed. She's looking around that town square like there's snipers out for her. She's
right.
Just like all over the place. Finally sees Jess. And what's he doing, man?
He's macking on the blonde.
He's macking on little blondie, Shane.
I know that Shane comes back, but I just imagine, like, if this is the only time we saw her, imagine being cast as, like, a featured extra who's, like, girl kissing Jess. That's your whole... She has no lines in this episode. Mm-hmm. And I know she comes back because she's in the next one. Mm-hmm. But it's really funny to me that in this episode, her entire existence is girl kissing Jess.
I wonder how much of our listenership would have killed to have been girl kissing Jess.
Buddy, I'd kill to be girl kissing Jess.
Really?
I'll get in the time machine, I'll go back, and I'll... First thing I do, be girl kissing Jess.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, let's talk about your social battery. What is it right now? Is it drained? Is it bursting with energy? Why is it at the level it's at? There's all these external factors that can make it the way it is. Maybe you're less social during certain seasons. Maybe you're experiencing a lack of boundaries with certain people that's making it more drained than it needs to be. Well, either way, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need a little more alone time. Well, either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've been in therapy for 11 years now, and it has been vital and crucial for figuring out how to not overexert myself socially, to keep my battery at a good charge, to not keep it too drained when I'm dealing with all the people that I actually want to be dealing with and not dealing with people in the way that I don't want to be, which is, of course, due to a lack of good boundaries or how to cope with people. And you learn how to do those things with therapy, because therapy gives you the tools to tune into yourself and understand, oh, I need this. I don't need this. I need to communicate this. I need to say this. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GilmoreGuys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GilmoreGuys.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Yeah, okay, so this brings up an interesting question because...
Does it?
Well...
Not the time machine stuff.
Yeah. Oh, no, we'll get into time travel. That'll be for our Doctor Who podcast. Does he travel in time? I don't know anything about
Doctor
that
Who?
Show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doctor Who?
Doctor Who?
Doctor Who? Taylor, for the reboot of Doctor Who that they'll do in like 5 years. But it does raise the interesting question. Okay, so we see in Washington, D.C.,
yep.
Paris and Rory living together in sort of a dormitory situation. And she goes into the closet when Paris says, if Jamie sees you.
I can't believe she played along with that.
It's so funny. I can't believe she stayed in there after they clearly left.
Yeah.
And she's just like chilling out. But you see all these, you see in the teaser, you see thousands of unopened letters from Dean or unreturned letters from Dean. And she has a little page, Dear Jess. But you never, you find out, spoiler, in the next episode, she never wrote them.
Right.
So she's just in the closet starting letters and never finishing them. She's in this real wishy-washy state, which is real... It's frustrating to watch. Do you think it's realistic the way they're playing it? Like Jess kind of slowly pulling... Rory's feelings for Jess slowly pulling her away from Dean? Because it's not a they kissed and then, boom, they're together. Like, do you like how it's being played out right now?
I don't like how it's being played out. I do think it's realistic, though. I think that I feel weird about her not at least returning. Like, it suggested that she doesn't return the letters to Dean either. She just has these all piled together.
Right. She has that great line when they're on the phone. Dean says, okay, I love you. And she says, gotta go.
I didn't even notice that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
gotta go.
It's not that quick, but he goes, I love you. Which, by the way, the room he's in, I know it's supposed to be like, this is a small town, but it looks like a scene from a David Lynch movie. The room that Dean is in. It's so interesting, the rooms that they put boys calling girls on the phone, whether it's Henry in season two. Or...
It looks like he's just in their living room, right?
Like... Yeah, but the wallpaper's all... It just reminded me of like a Twin Peaksy sort of blue velvet situation. But yeah, Dean says, I love you. He says, gotta go. And then this is the scene... I know I'm kind of skipping all over the point, because this was about a question about the festival and something that comes up there. But this is the scene where Rory... is talking to Paris about what to look for. And this is the first time, you know, I think that Paris has been in a relationship where a boy's asked her out. And yeah. It's real cute. This is probably this might be my favorite story of the episode, or the thread rather, is Paris going out with Jamie. Which I believe the shot of her opening the door is the one they use for the credit shot. If it's not this season, it'll be in the next one or the one after that. But Rory's talking about like, oh, what to look for in a guy and what to look for in a mate. And Rory says, someone who compliments you. But then she says, someone who likes basically the exact same stuff you do.
How do you know if a guy is right for you?
You just have to feel it.
All I feel is my back breaking out.
You'll know, okay? You just have to let it happen. And then, probably when you're not looking, you'll find someone who compliments you.
Meaning?
Someone who likes what you like. Someone who reads the same books, or... listens to the same music, or likes to trash the same movies. Someone compatible.
Okay.
But not so compatible that they're boring.
Someone who's compatible but not compatible.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you respect each other's opinions and you can laugh at the same jokes, but I don't know, there's just something about not quite knowing what the other person's gonna do at all times. It's just really exciting.
Like someone who's into blah, 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 and this, and likes the same music. Having just said someone who I don't know, I'm going crazy over this, but like we understand the definition of complimenting one another, spelled with an E, not an I, for all those SAT students out there. Sorry.
Someone who fits you like a puzzle piece, who is not the same as you.
Who has things that you don't have.
Yeah.
Who has qualities that you admire, that you aspire to or you like, who's into different stuff. Demi is into much different stuff than I am.
Which is why we're getting married.
Yeah, that's actually the next episode.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for the wedding episode of this podcast. It'd be funny to podcast your marriage. Actually, you know what? Our next guest in our next episode does podcast their marriage.
Really?
We'll get to that. But someone who compliments you, and I assume, and we talked about maybe for too much in length, according to some Twitter comments, about what kind of what we would look for in a mate in the first episode we did, and like the three things, and we went over that. But complimenting is such a huge thing, and it just seems like Rory is grasping at straws and doesn't even know what she's saying, like... that they're compatible, but not so compatible that they're boring. Like, I think she's describing Jess. And Jess does have things that are different from Rory. It just drove me crazy, because it just seemed like a teenage girl's definition of love.
Right.
Which it literally is, so maybe I shouldn't get mad. It's a high school girl's. I don't know, did you have any thoughts about that scene?
I didn't, but I did think it was weird that she was giving advice, given how sort of... turmoil, like how in
tumultuous.
Tumultuous her love life is currently. Yeah. Anyway.
The end.
And that's a wrap on Gilmore Girls.
And Gilmore Guys.
Yep.
We did it.
is this episode the first time we see Lorelai cry?
I think we see her yell cry.
Right.
Like in It Should Have Been Lorelai, I think 2:14. She kind of yell cries at Emily.
She, I think, yell cries when Dean and Rory come back
stay out too late. But like legit, like softly, sadly cries. Yeah, I think this is the first time. So let's talk about that scene. That's the last scene of the episode.
Yep.
And we'll skip around. We'll do the other scenes too, and we'll hit them. But it might be, that's really one of my favorite scenes of the show up to this point.
I feel like I'm never gonna have it. The whole package, you know? that person, that couple life. And I swear, I hate admitting it because I fancy myself Wonder Woman, but I really want it. The whole package.
This is a show written primarily by a woman and by women. A lot of the directors are women and most of the cast is women. And so I think with that, there's attached this idea. I read this really interesting article actually about 50 Shades of Grey. Devin Faraci over at Badass Digest did this article that was about, yeah, 50 Shades of Grey isn't a good movie, just like technically, but let's not all pile onto it. Because what that does is that perpetuates the narrative that things and entertainment made specifically for women is of lesser value.
Right.
So I think it's interesting, all that's to say, and that's a whole different discussion. Although I wonder if any time you're making entertainment for any subculture or a particular demographic that's not everybody, if it does, like, if it's harder or it does suffer, I don't know. But it's an interesting point because, like, it's the same reason, like, most rom-coms are reviled. Because most of them aren't good, but then that creates the narrative of like, if it's for women, then it's not good.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's like exceptions to it, and there's things we need to like. And I think that's like a lot of what this podcast is like, you know, valuing and kind of glorifying those things that are good, like shows like Gilmore Girls, or shows like Broad City, or awesome movies made for or made by women, like Obvious Child, Jenny Slate's movie. And countless other things. But I like that this is a show where all those things are true and our lead is super strong and super like autonomous and independent. But she breaks down this last scene and she does say, I know, you know, we heard in Pop Culture, but I know I come off or I want to be Wonder Woman, but I still want those things. I want the happy family. I want those things. And in a way that it doesn't make an apology for it, but just that both things are true.
Yeah.
I think is great. It's a kind of feminism, if I can use the word, that I think you would find in something like Parks and Recreation. Like, there's a lot. I know we just had Aisha on the show, but I feel like there's a lot of parallels between this show and that. Notwithstanding like townies and stuff, but also just kind of the brand of feminism. Not even having a conversation about the idea of having it all, as they would put on 30 Rock, but just saying like, yeah. Have the career, run the inn, be the politician, be the parks manager, blah, 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 blah. Have the family too. Like, it's just like all those things are true. And you don't have to be one thing or the other. I don't know if any of that made sense.
No, it made sense to me. It's weird that you say that about Parks and Rec because the latest episode, I don't know if you've caught it, is Adam Scott. Anyway.
The pie episode?
Yeah.
Yes, I did watch it.
That exact episode. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of parallels to exactly what you're talking about wanting to have it all per se and not – in like sort of this idea that if women want to do a thing that isn't a family – like focusing on a family, it's like that they can't have it all, and that's such a weird idea. But also with regards to Lorelai wanting to be Wonder Woman is almost the other way around. It's like if you want to – have a family, you have to sort of pretend like that's not what you want, you know?
Oh, how do you mean?
Like, I mean, with her whole thing about wanting to be Wonder Woman and also wanting the happy family
mm-hmm.
is her, like, she's sort of pretending like she's above having a happy family. Don't you think so?
You mean up to this point in the series?
Right.
Because she acts with such an autonomy where it's like, no, I don't need a man, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, and I think this is her admission to it. I think it was always true of the character, but I think it's the first time you actually see that played out. Mm-hmm. Like, she did on some level want to get married to Max. She just didn't want to try on the wedding dress the night before.
Right.
But I don't think that's to do with the idea of getting married. I think that's to do with Max in particular.
You think?
Yeah, I think so. The difference between good and great. Because she says, I desire a family, and I desire that, that traditional thing. And that's okay, and that's good. And it's just an interesting scene. I think it's one that, like, is worth being dissected as much as we are right now, dissecting it. Because it's really, I don't know, I even feel like there's more to say on it that we're not qualified to. So I guess we'll leave it at that. Podcast over.
Podcast over and wrap.
Just kidding. So do you fault Jess for getting together with Shane over the break?
That is a difficult thing because the way that Rory sort of isn't reaching out to Jess or anything like that is partially makes me think, oh, I understand why Jess did that. But also, is it weird that Jess didn't reach out to Rory?
Well, and see, that's the that is the implicit nature of like, oh, well, that's Jess. He doesn't reach out. He doesn't make an effort unless it's from a payphone New York to say, sup, you know, yeah, and nothing else. Because he does. Well, that's kind of in the next episode. But it is kind of put on her like, oh, well, you didn't call and you didn't, you know, I didn't get a letter. I didn't blah, 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 blah. But it is a two-way street. And he is not pursuing her like a man should. Again, he's 17 years old, I know, but he's not even pursuing her, just I think in a baseline, respectful, honorable way where it's right. Like, I like you, I'm into you, not these weird games and just like the fact that he, like, I think it is a move. I think it's a bratty move to get together with a girl knowing there's so much, like, why is he in Stars Hollow? It's not for Shane. Right. He didn't move from New York to Stars Hollow to make out with Blondie under the tree. Like, he moved back for Rory.
Exactly.
So it really does betray that intention, and it just kind of seems like a power move or kind of a subtle F you, or how he's dealing with his hurt feelings over Rory not reaching out to him. Because he probably would have reached back. He probably would have. But it's there's definitely fault on both sides there. Agreed?
Yeah. But I feel like this is weird to say because sure, I'm not Team Jess, but I feel like I'm more on his side of understanding where this is. Like, I don't fault him for going for like sort of like dropping the idea of being with Rory because she's been in Washington for a ton of time and not even reached out to him once.
And technically still in a relationship. So yes, in a way it's like, well, you have a boyfriend. I'm not going to pursue you.
Which is the opposite of what Jess has been
doing up until this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm with you. I'll give it to him. I know I'm hard on the
kid.
But
at the same time, I hate that like in the next episode we realize he's just kind of the same old jerk. So yep. I don't know how to feel.
Let's talk about, and we'll talk about in the next episode, but let's also talk about the scene of Richard and Emily's, which was such a bummer. So this isn't the last act of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no sympathy on either of their sides.
No.
It's so cold. Actually, one of my favorite moments of this episode was the way Lauren Graham's amazing.
The way she reacts to Richard?
Yeah, well, the way she leaves the scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think on other, so they, you know, they're like, oh, why'd you screw it up? Why'd you not get together with Christopher when she tells them, like, oh, yeah, Sherry got pregnant. He's going to be with her. And they question her. They're not like, oh, I'm so sorry. That must be so tough. I know you wanted it to work out. They don't say that.
Yeah.
They're just like, well, it's still kind of your fault.
Right.
Like, it's such a, they are so stuck in their ways. Yeah, and it's very frustrating to watch. It's nice when one of them kind of has a point where it's like, oh, yeah, I kind of get it. Lorelai is being stubborn. But seeing her just get pounded on by both of them is not fun.
Yeah.
And so her reaction to it, because they do eventually just start, like, yelling at each other, kind of, and she just picks up her stuff and leaves. Right. But I feel like lesser actresses and on lesser shows that would have been played so differently. Either it would have been bigger or it would have been more played for comedy or one thing or the other. But the way Amy wrote the scene and Lauren plays it, she's just like, it's very sad. It's like this inevitable march towards like more misery or walking away from pain, even though she's going to return. There'll be more Friday night dinners. But there's just like a look in her face when she's doing it that I haven't seen before on a show, and on this show, where she's just like, okay, this is what it is, and I know this is like the price you pay anytime you try to engage with my parents, blah, blah, blah. And she just like slowly walks away.
Yeah.
It's a good moment.
I especially like that when she's walking away, Richard is starting to walk away too, and Emily's more occupied with trying to get him to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, he's just walking to the study, and she's like not even acknowledging the fact that Lorelai has left.
Yeah. But so it was a real in that way, I did not enjoy the Emily and Richard stuff. Like, it's good, but there was no joy in watching it.
Right.
Because it seemed like there's no progress on their perspectives either. They're not, even after two seasons, they don't seem to be understanding Lorelai better.
Mm-hmm.
They still seem to be in a real stubborn place about it. Oh, one note I made, because they go briefly to Mrs. Kim's, even though Lane isn't in this episode. Is it funny that Mrs. Kim is and Lane isn't?
Yeah.
But they're looking around for stuff, for manly stuff for Jackson, and that dumb storyline. Just kidding. And the way, when we haven't articulated this on the show before, but the way Melissa McCarthy gestures towards stuff, it's always like she's a stiff magician. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where she'll be like, ooh, I like this.
Yeah.
She, and it's totally, again, a visual thing, but no, I think people know what I'm talking about. Like, she's always doing like a stiff magic trick. So, do you want to take a call?
If we have one, like, I don't know how to.
Hello?
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hey, who are we speaking to?
This is Brianne Loveless.
Brianne Loveless, hello.
Hi, Brianne.
Hello.
Hey, what do you want to talk about 301?
I really like the sequence, like the dream sequence at the beginning, the cold open.
You did like that? Because we were talking about it. It seemed like kind of a cheat to us.
A cheat?
Yeah, it just seemed kind of like empty fan service.
Oh, yeah. I get it. Do you guys, how are you feeling about, like, the whole Christopher Lorelei thing going on?
I'm very upset about it, because just how Emily and Richard are acting in relation to that, it just makes me not want to be on their side about things like this. Like, they always seem to want what they think is best, even though it's never what their daughter really... It's never in their daughter's best interest.
And there's so much more in Christopher's corner than Lorelai. To the point, I don't know if it stretches credibility, but it's just so frustrating that it's like, man, it's your daughter. And you're just like, well, Christopher wanted to do the right thing 17 years ago. And it's always, that's always the argument. It's like, he wanted to make one good decision 17 years ago. To say nothing of the fact, and we didn't talk about this, so it's good to talk about it now, is like, to say nothing of the fact that there was negligence on his part up until the point in season one, where it's like, oh yeah, I haven't been around for Rory. I want to be around now. And so for Richard and Emily to keep holding on to this idea is very unreasonable, I think.
Yeah. They always just, like, put him on a pedestal, and they don't really consider that maybe, you know, he wanted to do the right thing, but probably just because he was afraid, like, he was scared. But that's because all of that stuff was going on, you know?
Yeah, it was a fear-based decision made by a 16-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the other thing. It's like they're putting him on a pedestal because a 16-year-old boy was like, oh, yeah, I'll marry the girl I impregnated. Oops.
It's really weird that they do that.
Seriously, how come is, like, you know, he's 16 and they're making, and then he wasn't, and then when Lorelai made her own decision, he wasn't around for years. How do they not consider that, you know?
Yeah, it's tunnel vision, and it's a little upsetting. And I think it really is a ding on Emily and Richard's character both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love them, but at the same time, they tend to do things that they think is okay, but in reality, it's just what they think is going to be right for Lorelai, which ends up usually backfiring for them.
Totally. And it's like that. I think this might be, if they have a fatal flaw as parents, I think this might be it. Is because I think of what it represents of, like, just not seeking to understand what their daughter wants and desires, and not, like, pursuing that, like, okay, well, we want you to marry Christopher, but what do you, like, just like, and it seems simple. I don't know. I'm not a parent, but it seems simple. So, yeah, Brianne, what would you give this episode if you had to rate it?
I think it was really good, like, season opener. And
we were kind of whatever on it, actually.
I don't know. I think it was okay, but I don't know. I liked the season finale better because a lot of crazy stuff happened.
The previous season finale of season two?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot more storytelling momentum. This was kind of wheel spinny for me.
Yeah.
So. All right. Anything else before you go?
I was gonna ask you guys if you ever noticed how Jess's, like, lip is, like, crooked when he talks.
Oh no.
And because me and my roommates were watching Heroes, and my roommate pointed it out that whenever he talks, like, his bottom lip is kind of like, I don't know. Anyway, so now every time I watch anything with him in it, that's all I see. And so it's really annoying. And anyway, but I just wanted to see. If
now I gotta pay attention for this.
The crooked lip. I've literally, and you know, I'm critical of Jess, but I've never noticed the crooked lip thing.
Yeah. Okay. You have to notice it next time.
I will. I will credit you because, for pointing it out to us.
Yeah, it's just really. It really bugs me now. Every time I see him talk, I'm just like, oh, no, fix your crooked lip.
All right, well, we'll pay attention to that crooked lip in 302. Thanks so much for calling, Brianne.
All right, thanks, guys. Huh?
Goodbye. That's a good call.
Yeah.
Those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Ooh.
We'll take one more call. Here we go. Let's gab. Hello?
Hi, this is Kiani.
Hey.
What's your name?
Kiani,
like Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Right on. Kiani, how's it going?
Pretty good. I was wondering, what did Demi think of the first clip, the first scene of the episode?
That, man, that's the one everyone's nailing
yeah.
so far.
So as soon as she goes down to the kitchen and sees Luke, I just started rolling my eyes because I knew it was a dream sequence. I knew it was the kind of thing that, like... See, in my head, I just imagined how it originally aired and how everyone was probably like, what? Oh, my God. Are they together now? And, like, I just know that if I'd seen that live, I would have just been like, why are you doing this? Don't tease us like this.
Why?
It's fan service. Why? Damn it, Taylor. But it just kind of – it was the kind of thing where I was like, all right, no, I get what you're trying to do, but, like, it's not working. It doesn't work for me. It was just kind of this annoying sort of thing of, like, they were trying to set up a story – based on what everyone had already wanted to happen ages ago. So it's just mm-hmm. this kind of thing of like, we haven't mentioned how they're supposed to be together in a while, so here's us going full throttle on this.
Yeah, it's having your cake and eating it too.
Exactly.
I feel like there's other Will They or Won't They shows that do that. Like I know Mulder and Scully shared New Year's Eve kiss in season mm-hmm. 7 of The X-Files. And it's like, oh, it kind of doesn't count, you know. Or I'm trying to think of one where it's a dream sequence. Can you think of one, Kiani?
No, not really.
That's okay. Anything else you want to talk about 301?
Yeah, how about Paris and her first date?
I hope her date went well because all I could, like, I was just, I'm excited for Paris to have a romantic subplot that shows her being nervous and also just being excited to do something that isn't politics.
An annoying Barbara Boxer.
Exactly.
Comedy legend Barbara Boxer.
Comedy legend Barbara Boxer.
Yeah, we got a lot of love for Paris.
Yeah, same here.
Right on. Anything else? What would you rate the episode?
I like this one. I always would give it a 9 or something.
9? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I like seeing Paris like nervous. It's really fun. And yeah. how she just is frenicky all the time.
I
at that
know.
Point.
She's so cute. Like, that's one of the best when she's like, because for her, her projection of confidence is so huge that it's only mm-hmm. matched by her projection of insecurity. Like, it's like, if he sees you, he won't want me anymore. And Rory's like, what? He's seen me all day.
Yeah. I was so sad for her in that moment because, like, in her head, like, that's real. That's a fact. Like, if he sees you, it's over for me. And I was like, Paris, that's so ridiculous and that's so upsetting, and yeah. I'm sorry that you feel that way.
Yeah, poor girl.
Poor girl.
Well, thanks for calling in, Kiani. Really appreciate talking with you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll hear from you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, I said we'll hear from her soon, but maybe we won't. Well, just like she might not call again.
No, I know.
Maybe she had such a terrible experience. Like, they just laughed and I couldn't hear anything. You know, I don't know.
It was the worst calling I've ever done.
And I've done them all. I've done called Chelsea Peretti. I've done my local my local radio stations.
Bailey set soundboards for me.
That's true. We didn't play any soundboards. All right. Well,
shall we write the episode?
I think we shall. I did not hate it, and there were things about it I really liked, but I didn't love it.
Right.
And there was something about it that just kind of rang hollow, if you will. Sorry.
Oh, brother.
Ooby.
Oh, brother. I'm just going to play
so,
that over and over.
They're setting up the pieces, but they're not doing anything with them. Oh, I did want to talk about Dean's dumb face when he sees Lorelai and Rory yelling, oh, we didn't talk about that. Hold on. Let's talk about Lorelai and Rory when she's like, yeah, we kissed. And Lorelai's, what? You did what? Blah, 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 blah. And she gets real mad at her and real aggro in the town square.
She doesn't get aggro, does she? I felt like she was just kind of like, oh, what? You did? Huh?
Yeah. Well, no, I thought she was mad.
Oh.
I thought she was legit mad.
Maybe I read it differently. She seemed like she was just kind of like, oh, whoa, that's weird.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And then Dean walks up and he's like,
he's got the goofiest look on his face.
Well, because they're fighting and it's just the shots on them. And then off screen you hear, Rory. And then he's like, And he just walks on screen like a dumb, dumb laboratory
dumb
retriever.
Piece of shit.
Oh, Jared, we love you. Come on the show.
Yeah, we love you.
So I'm going to, overall, I'm going to give this, there's nothing wrong about it, but it just didn't tickle my fancy, if you know what I mean. So I'm going to give it 6.5 out of 10 bags of scone mix.
I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 first-time customer donuts. Because...
Oh, wait a minute. You know what? I'm going to give it 7, too.
I was about to say, because that specific scene is the only reason
Paris,
that I rate it.
Yeah.
Actually, that scene and Paris's thing.
Yeah.
Those two scenes are the saving grace of this episode. I think if they were in any other episode, I'd just be like, these are fantastic scenes. But I will say that everything else in this episode feels like it was just drawn down in a way that is like, I didn't need to see anything else of this episode. All of the conflicts that they try to set up here are really unresolved. The thing with Luke and the dream sequence, the thing with Jess and Rory isn't resolved until the next episode. It's just an introduction and a reminder of what's been happening. So it kind of feels like a boring episode for people to play catch up with. But considering that we have literally just watched all of the stuff that they're trying to catch us up on, it seems unnecessary. Mm-hmm. I wish we'd seen more of Washington, more of their life in Washington, you know? My prediction was going to be that we did, but clearly I was wrong.
Oh, yeah, you made some predictions about this.
I made some pretty strong predictions that immediately were wrong.
But we did see a little bit of it.
Yeah,
some senator cameos, so there was that.
That's true. I just wish we had been the kind of thing where, like, she's in Washington for a while, and then, like, she gets a letter from Jess, and it's like, oh, should I respond to this? No, I won't. And then she comes back.
It is funny, the and we'll get to it. I'm not going to tell you in what capacity she is on the show, but one of Parks and Recreation's last episodes, they had Senator Barbara Boxer on and Secretary Madeleine Albright.
Madeleine Albright is not in this show, is she? What?
She 100% is.
I love politicians that are like so game to be in like TV shows. Just like, that's great. I can't wait to see her.
I said secretary as if she was like the lady that takes phone calls. She was the Secretary of State.
Right, right, right.
I just wanted to, like, before
oh, she Richard's secretary.
Oh, yeah.
He has the buzz.
A little light on soundboards this
banging
episode.
The Swede.
Well, do I have any other soundboards from this episode?
Banging the Swede.
Well, that's not from this episode, but I guess he was...
Banging the Swede.
Banging the Swede.
Is it even lower than what you were doing at? Oh, my only other soundboard from this episode was...
Yeah, yeah!
What is that?
When she goes, it was a Divine Secrets of the Yah Yah Sisterhood reference. And she says, Rory says something about sisterhood. And Lorelai goes,
yeah, yeah!
Yeah, yeah!
Ha!
Do you ever hear some of the references and think, like, that's sort of clunky in a way that there was a moment where they were talking on the couch and saying something back and forth, and then she says...
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Williams sisters at Wimbledon.
The way that she says it, it's so wordy, and she says it so casually that it's like, that's a little too...
It's very written. That's just the style of the show.
It's very written.
I think that line could have been improved just by... Just take out the Wimbledon or whatever. Ladies and gentlemen, the Williams sisters. Because we've heard variations on that line before in this show and other shows.
Of course.
But there was an extra wordiness to that that put it over the top. But good episode overall, just not great. And you want your premieres to be really great. And it lacked a little bit of heart in that sense. it sounds like I'm just slowing down and slowly dying. At Jennifer Lentz tweeted, this episode was crummier than the scones at a DART party.
Oh, shit.
Jennifer.
Isn't it just DAR?
A Daughters of the American Revolution tea party.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's it for this
episode. Oh, DAR. tea party. I thought it was D-A-R-T party. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My bee.
Let's do where you tweet out who follow.
Yeah.
You can follow me at Kevin T. Porter on Twitter and Instagram and not on Vine. We won't do Vine. No to Vine.
Why do we even mention it?
I don't know. I could have just not very easily right now.
You can follow me at Electrolemon on Twitter and Instagram.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yep.
Electrolemon.
You should know, in the silence is just me staring and smiling at him, waiting for him to play that damn soundboard.
That damn soundboard.
You can follow the show at Gilmore Guys Show on Twitter and on Instagram. You can email us at GilmoreGuysShow@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, Gilmore Guys Show.
Facebook.com/GilmoreGuysShow.
Even better.
And then SoundCloud, SoundCloud.com/Gilmore-Guys.
Yep.
Incones.
Yeah, and then we're on Instagram too. I love doing Instagram for the show.
I already said that.
You did?
I did. Pay attention. Oh, no, shit. I'm kidding. I did, but
whatever. Oh, sorry. Well, yeah, follow us on Instagram. We control the account now. And stay with us for the next episode, or should I say,
stay with me.
La 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 la.
Okay,
that wasn't the right song.
Let's sing the theme song for maybe the 50th time. No.
No.
44th.
Fifth.
Because we combined some episodes. We're in the 40s now. Whatever. Let's just sing it. Let's stop talking about it. Oh. They're out.
On the road. Feeling lonely. And so cold. All you have to do is call my name and I'll be there.
772-934-4559.
Where you lead.
I
will follow anywhere.
I'm the sick one, dude. That you tell me.
I'm the sick one now.
You need me to be with you. I will follow. Oh.
Oh. Oh.
Oh.
I will follow.
Oh.
Anywhere.
Tell me to.
If you need.
You need me to be.
Season 3
with
is here.
You.
We're going to talk
follow.
About it. Jess Dean
Wayne. Season 3.
Almost.
I like that song.
Well, I was going to ask, dude, do you like that song?
I like that song.
Good impression of Michelle, Demi.
I like that song.
I like that song.
I gotta get better.
Nice chicken.
Goodbye.